I was asking you about your travels to the moon.
Yeah.
Now, what did you actually do when you projected yourself astrally to the moon?
Well, when you project yourself astrally to the moon, you're invisible. But you go there, and your body, there's no eyes, no sound, no feeling. But whatever you receive is impulses, just like radar. This little ball, or whatever form you form, it receives impulses of what goes on. And these are transmitted back to you through so-called a silver cord, which is really a ray, and then reflected in your mind, which you'll leave impression. And then the mind receives those impressions, and you know what it is. Like I'm looking at you, or a light bounces back, and I see you. This acts only like a distant light or distant radar.
Now, do you interpret that as if you were there looking at it?
Just like I'm talking to you.
Just like you're talking to me. Yeah. Well, when you were on the moon, what did you see?
I wasn't on the moon. I traveled, I stood there, and I seen different things, as I told you. I told you they were boring, not a hole in the middle of the moon, as has been coming out here. But on the sides of the moon, there were boring tunnels. And these tunnels were to use to get the hot air and coils in there so they could warm up the cold side of the moon. Now, last time I made a mistake. I says it's 3 miles around the moon. That's it's really 70 miles. I want that corrected.
It's seven
70 miles.
Around the moon.
Yeah, it's because one side, with the very cold edge and the very hot, there's a mingling there.
There's
more.
What, sir? I'm sorry.
The mingling of the two.
The mingling of the two.
Yeah,
yes.
That is the center where this life, that people started off.
Well, do I understand from that the moon is 70 miles in circumference?
No. You understand well. The border, which is livable, is 70 miles. And where the moon comes around the earth between the cold and the warm. Now, there's also rain and moisture around the moon caused by these here. Now, at times when we have so-called a disturbance in our atmosphere, or the atmosphere is right, you see a halo around the moon. They say that's a sign of rain here.
You would see a what?
A halo.
Oh.
That halo is really the moisture of the moon.
Oh, I see.
That's where the disturbance is. That's what it is today.
There's one thing that I want to
get... Now, where do I get through with the moon? Now, the moon, really...
Well, I don't want to get through with the moon. I want to ask you a question.
Well, if I can't finish the question, let me finish first. Let me finish with the facts, and you'll get the answer.
I think, in all fairness, Mr.
I quite agree. No,
the moon is really a solar battery, just like we have a solar battery. One side, these people here are trying to hope what they're doing. They have to use the moon, and they have minerals on one side, metals on the other, to use this as a natural solar battery so that they can transmit this power, and someday we'll use the moon as a solar battery and transmit power to the earth. And we're getting all our energy that the earth has from the power that the moon's transmitting to us. Now, the people over there are doing this. And any space you get, and not from outer space, it's just from the moon and no place else. And others you get right from earth here themselves, which are come through the ground through what they call electronic action and are coming now out right from the ground itself.
Is that the answer to the question so I could get in this other question?
No, you go ahead. Now you ask the question.
All right. Well, now, you spoke of a 70-mile area. Is that a band around the moon?
Where the moon is livable? The band where the moon is, you see.
Yeah.
There's a question of 70 miles, which is livable.
Right. That's between the dark side and the light side.
Now,
that 70-mile band stays where it is all the time.
Yeah, that goes around.
Well, is it your understanding, then, that one side of the moon is constantly lighted and the other side is constantly dark?
Well, I won't say it's dark. It's twilight.
But in other words, the sun only shines on one side of the moon.
Because it's facing the sun all the time. Only when there's an eclipse or there's a new moon, that the sun shines only at that time on the dark side.
Well, let me get a definite answer to this question. It is your statement and understanding that the sun shines only on one side of the moon.
Yeah, but only once. The 2 days when there's a new moon, the sun is on the opposite side of the moon.
Well,
what we call a new moon.
Now, let's take a situation which the sun, or which the moon, is on the other side of the earth from the sun. The sun is then shining on the part we see. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Now, what Where is the sun shining when the moon is between the sun and the earth?
I mean,
What part of the moon does the sun hit when the moon is between the sun and the earth?
The moon is between the sun. It hits on the light side of the moon.
Oh,
we are hit by the dark side.
In other words, the light, the side that we see, yeah, then faces the sun.
Yeah.
Then the moon rotates with respect to us.
Yeah.
Well, this is contrary.
The moon rotates around the moon, around the earth, in a wheel form.
Well, is the same face of the moon always towards us?
Yeah. Oh, as I told you, when we have the new moon.
Well, I'm not.
For 2 days, the 24-hour time, the moon changes.
Wait, in other words, it swings around.
The sun just causes, and that's the only time we have the dark side of the light side of the moon is dark. And that variation is so small it cannot heat up the moon, of course, and that also helped. This helps the cold side. That's the only time it happens.
Well, in other words, in those 2 days, the side.
Well, it's 24 hours, really.
Well, in that 24 hours, the side of the moon that we normally see is facing away from us.
Yeah.
During that period.
Yeah.
Well, then the geography on both sides of the moon must be identical. Is that your understanding?
No.
Well, because astronomers have seen many times during that period the other face of the moon by its reflected Earth shine. They see it by the reflected light of the Earth, and it appears identical to what we normally see.
Oh, that's what they think.
Oh, this, you mean they're suffering hallucinations?
Not hallucinations, they think they see the whole thing.
Well, now, here this astronomer, Professor X, is looking through his nice, big, shiny, new, expensive telescope at the moon. During this 24-hour period, he sees what he thinks to be the same face of the moon. Is he then hallucinating?
Well, at times, maybe the moon don't spin all around. Maybe, as I say, I'm going to tell you something I don't know.
In other words, when anybody's watching, it doesn't spin.
I'm applying a physical law that exists, not what man sees. If somebody tells you about flying saucers, and three people say, you say got hallucinations. That's a flying saucer. It's a spaceship, too. The man can be wrong, too.
Well, but
I'm going by physical laws. I'm not going by horoscope and telescope.
I understood you just to say that apparently sometimes when the people were watching, the moon didn't spin. Was that what you said?
The time that I was up there astrologically.
Well, not astrally, but astrologically.
Astrologically means to astral projection.
Well, that is what astrologically means?
When you say astrologically, can be by astrology, but I mean astral projection.
This is what you mean and not necessarily anybody
else.
How
did I know that the people on the moon? Did the professor tell you it was people on the moon?
Well, no, he didn't tell me
that. All right. Then who's more important, his statements or mine?
Well, I suspect.
Who are more accurate, his statements or mine?
Well, I would suspect, seeing as you're on this program, that your statements would
be. Not because I'm on the program.
Oh.
Did anyone ever tell you that Mercury was a satellite and call it a planet?
No, I didn't
It's all through the books, it's a planet. A planet that moves on its own axis. Yet I know because through my knowledge I gained through the fourth dimension, they told me it was a satellite.
Who told you?
It's the fourth dimension. When I go to the fourth dimension, talk to the fourth dimension, people in the fourth dimension.
Well, the people in the fourth dimension.
They're not people like you and I. They just claim the people who are in the fourth dimension.
Well, there are people in the fourth dimension.
People always claim the souls, what they call of the dead, the so-called spirit. Call the spirit, call what you want.
Well, the spirits told you that Mercury was a satellite.
It doesn't move on its axis. We have basic scientific fact that Mercury doesn't move on its axis.
You mean that the scientists told you this and not spirit?
Just like you would say the moon. They're calling it a planet. They've been teaching people planet. Still, it's not a planet. Pluto doesn't move around its axis. They know God's playing well. In fact, proved out there that it doesn't move on its axis. Therefore, that's also a satellite.
Who knows this? Scientists or the spirits?
Look at your astronomical records.
Well, I've looked at those records, and I find that the planet Mercury, or Mercury if you want to call it a satellite, does move on its axis. And this movement on the axis is such that it always faces the same side toward the sun. But in going around the sun, if it didn't move on its axis, it would face all of its sides eventually toward the sun. As it is, in rotating on its axis, which it has to do in order to always present the same side toward the sun, it is moving on its axis.
But it's almost similar to the moon as on the Earth, on a similar pattern. Well, one side of Mercury is cold, one side is hot.
Yes.
So therefore, it's not a planet, it's a satellite.
This is the thing that decides that.
How about the sunspots? Years ago, they called them kind of sunspots. What are they? They're solar moons. Every 11 years, the solar moons pass by the sun, causing sunspots. To the new infrared ray cameras they had been investigating in the big telescope, there's an entirely different process that were meteors falling to the sun, now they know that they're moons.
Well, which, in this case, you seem to be quoting to us the authority of scientists, whereas just before you were saying the scientists weren't right about things.
Who's the authority on science?
Before, Mr.
With everyday things taking place and going around, who claims he's an authority? Because you can't prove it. They got something that you can't prove. They consider a fact.
Well, what are you now? Material
things, yes.
What are you now saying? That you believe scientists or that you don't believe them?
I believe scientists, but they themselves can be disillusioned. Don't forget, a scientific man can be disillusioned too. And they grant delusion in a state of mind.
Well, how do you know?
If so, because eventually every scientific thing can be disapproved. Because another man will come up and prove that he's wrong.
How do you know when this scientist is is whatever he is? How do you know when he's not right?
When somebody has come along and proves he's wrong.
Like the spirits, for example.
Some people claim there's no thought, there's no spirit, yet people are hoping for salvation from the heavens. Why are they praying to the heavens for?
Well, the point...
But they're hoping, but they still turn around and tell the same man, no, there's no spirit, there's nobody up there. Still the same man will turn around and pray to the heavens, that he's calling for help.
Well,
now, he's denying himself.
No, in other words, you will believe in the scientists as long as you are not informed otherwise that they're wrong. Is that correct?
I believe a scientist in material form when he subsistently goes through the material things. But when he tries to go too far, beyond the realm of divinity, then he's nuts.
Now, when
he tries to trust people, all here on earth, that he's important.
Oh, I see. You think that the function of
this... If these things were so important, what happened to our scientists with our country and Sputnik? They've been giving us a line, and I want everybody to know that. They still don't know nothing and never get there. And this is a statement made on this station by the mystic Barber and Prophet.
Do you think, then, that the scientists are concerned with self-aggrandizement rather than the pursuit of science?
It's the average statement. You get an individual, he becomes important. As soon as he becomes important, he's an authority.
Do you think maybe the situation isn't reversed?
Huh?
You think maybe he doesn't become an authority first and then become important?
No, the way we're living
today,
I can show you commentators on radio. After they become important, they have no hand in advertising hair time and good for your hair.
Yeah, well, that...
I'm not mentioning names now. Then I can show you all the religious... not
very
religious, organization, like I'll mention my own, the Knights of Pythias, where I belong. One of Father's organizations.
Yes.
Now, I don't know if you're a Brother Pythian or not.
No, I don't have to be.
One day a group came in, they're crying to us. They won't take us in because we're too old. I, being the father in the order, said, all right, give the boys a break, take them in. Year two passed by, they became organized.
Well, I'm interested in your comments on
I'm
this.
I'm going to give you what goes on. About a year after this group is well established, another group comes over. Mr. Sinatra, please, you took those papers in, we're too old. The same group that was crying, that pleaded to come in, opposed the situation, because they're already important. What was the outcome? I threw them out. Now, you see, that's what happens. A man becomes important in science. He gets a lot of write-up. Even does know nothing. He becomes important. And people look at him as an example. What is behind the example? Look at your newspapers today. Of all these big people who are important. They're the trash of the earth. The trash of society.
Isn't that rather strong language?
It is strong. It's true. Read your papers today.
But this is apparently what the mystic Barber believes, so we
I
can't
believe
deny
it's true.
These
I
opinions.
Go if I want the papers. Get a woman to her something. She does something wrong. She's prosecuted because she's a poor girl or something. The church and everything is part of my...
Mystic Barber, this is not exactly germane to the discussion.
No, this is... Then you get another girl. She's glamorized by a rich man. She Miss Rather, an apartment. It's taken care of her. What did I do? Isn't she just as guilty as the other girl? They well, make
this, a movie this may well be, but the thing that I'm trying to establish is that this is not exactly germane to the discussion of astral projection.
Well, we're talking on certain facts, the true and false facts, how people see things.
Well, yes, this
That's
is...
That's why we're headed for hell. It ain't going to be long.
Now, just a moment.
I'm sorry.
I realize you came a little excited, Mystic Barber. This happens, and while you're so excited, believe me, I'm very excited, too, to talk about one of my sponsors, Andy Sinatra. Mr. Sinatra practices his profession in Brooklyn, New York, a tonsorial artist, and he also is a gentleman who claims that he can project himself astrally, and that's why we call him, or rather why he calls himself, the Mystic Barber. Now, during the time that we were listening to the commercial for Ballantine's Ale and No-Dose, and I might also add that No-Dose comes in the blue box with the bright red letters, N-O-D-O-Z, 15 tablets for 35 cents, and they're available in your drugstore. During the time we were listening to those two or three commercials, I was talking with Mrs. Sinatra for a moment. That's the Mystic Barber's charming wife. And the Mystic Barber made some comment that he would like to tell us about their trip to the moon. And when he said their trip to the moon, am I wrong?
No.
What did you say, Mystic Barber?
My astral projection. You want me to give you the story?
I know. I'd like to hear it from Mrs. Sinatra.
No. Well, I'll explain to you for it. Then she'll come at the fact as true.
I have no doubt about that. But I
said that in my last broadcast.
May I just interrupt you for a moment, please? No. I would appreciate it very much if you correct me if I'm wrong. But as far as the details, I would like to hear them from Mrs. Sinatra. Did you say, I mean, was I wrong when I said that you'd made the statement that the both of you had gone to the moon?
Yeah, that was a misunderstanding.
Fine, I'm sorry. I apologize. Yeah. Would you correct me, please?
Yeah.
What did you say then about
Mrs.? I said that she was witness at the time that I projected myself to her, which I mentioned in the last broadcast. I'll repeat it when I was off hunting in Beacon.
That's
and
right.
The moon was right, and I told my friends, look, I'm going to project myself to my wife. I says, and for me, go there to see what she says. Now, I projected myself from Beacon to her while she was sleeping.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll make it brief.
Yeah.
You tell as brief as possible,
yeah.
Because Mrs. Sinatra is kind enough to join us for just a couple of minutes, and I don't want her to be bored, because she's heard this story and she's experienced this. And if you'll be as brief as possible to tell us about this phenomenon, then we'll have Mrs. Sinatra comment. Will you please, Mr.
Barber? I'm just going to say this story and then let her tell her story. And I appeared to her in a room where we sleep. She saw me. She was scared of me. She says, what are you doing here? And she started trying to push me away. And I appeared in my physical form. I physical myself.
I think we should establish this, though. At that time, you were in Beacon, New York. Isn't that right? You were not in Brooklyn.
Yeah, but I materialized myself. Now, sometimes when I want to do this, I can. But at times, I materialized myself several times without knowing that I could do it. This was done on the impulse.
Now, you were on a hunting trip with some other gentlemen.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you decided to project yourself astrally. This was not teleportation.
No, this was when we went to bed. We had something to eat. I says, the moon is right.
When you went to bed in Beacon, New York.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's our aunt's place went up there. She's got an aunt.
You were visiting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I says, we're going to see if I transmit myself to my lab. We were talking. I went off. The fellas watched me. They says, I was talking to somebody. I was talking to myself. Then I told him. Then when we came back, we came over to the house and we bought wrappings and stuff. She says, you know, she says, if you trying any experiment? I says, yeah. I says, did you see me come? She says, yeah. She'll tell you herself. She was in front of me.
Did
I tried to push you away. And it was the time and the hour that I transmitted myself.
The gentlemen who were on this hunting trip with you, did they see the silver cord when you projected yourself from the physical
body?
They
can't see that.
Oh, they can't see that.
That's just
they
like
saw it. The physical body.
They saw me laying there, and I was talking to myself and talking to somebody.
Fine.
That's all they know.
Thank you.
I need my wife to give you. She's an honest girl. She'll tear me up when I'm wrong.
No doubt of that.
She tried to tell me, try to be as close to the truth as possible. She's there to witness.
I don't think that she's going to be as close to the truth as possible. I know that she's going to be very truthful about everything. She doesn't have to be close. She will be accurate. Is that right?
Yeah.
Thank you. Mrs. Sinatra, do you want to move up just a little closer and sort of lean down in here and just relax? This thing in front of you means nothing at all. It looks rather frightening. Actually, it is nothing more than a concealed camera, but we've run out of film, so we will not be making any more pictures with this. But you sort of face this because this gives you the proper direction so that you and I can, you know, sort of look at each other while we're talking. Your husband, the Mystic Barber, related a story to us, and you've just heard this. He was up in Beacon, New York, on a hunting trip with some friends, evidently in your aunt's home. And during the time that he was up there, he was able to project the astral body to the bedroom that is used by you and the Mystic Barber when he's at home, when he isn't out on a hunting trip. Could you tell us something about that, please?
Well,
in other words, how did he appear to you that night in your bedroom?
Well, this was a dream. This was in a dream form, and I saw him, and I was pushing him away. He told me to go away from me.
In other words, you were dreaming that night,
yes.
Mrs. Sinatra?
Yes, I was dreaming.
Well, then this did not happen?
No, well, I didn't see this. This was in a dream form that he appeared to me in dream form.
I don't quite follow it yet. According to the Mystic Barber, he has told us that when he was in Beacon, New York, he was lying in bed at the end of a rough day of hunting, and he was tired and he was relaxing, and then he projected his body astrally to your bedroom. And he tells us that you pushed him away. In other words, you were frightened, and logically so. I can understand a person who knows that their mate is someplace else and all of a sudden appears in the bedroom. This is rather frightening. Did you actually push him away?
I said before.
Well, the thing
is, this is in a dream form.
You were...
I didn't actually see nothing. This is a dream.
A dream on the part of the Mystic Barber or a dream on your part?
A dream on my part.
You were lying in bed sleeping.
Yes.
And you had a dream that you saw your husband. Was that it?
Yes.
And what occurred in the dream?
That he appeared naked to me and I was pushing him away.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is quite proper. Sometimes possibly he just returned from a shower or something and hadn't had the time to put on a garment or anything.
Well, have you at other times in your dreams seen your husband or talked to him? Or you must have in dreams talked to people.
Well, you see, sometimes he talks to people and he says, when I go home, my wife is going to tell me about this incident. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, when he comes home, he happened to be away up in Sharon Springs. He was working out there. And when he came home, I told him that if he was talking to some person, and I described this girl to a teak. And he says, that's right.
Well, back to this one particular, on this particular line, what I'm trying to establish is that in ordinary, normal dreaming, you must have held conversations with friends and spoken to people and seen them in just ordinary dreams, haven't you? Well, you have had a considerable number of other dreams aside from this particular time when your husband appeared to you.
Well, this only happened about twice.
But in the course of your lifetime, you have dreamed.
Yes, I do dream.
And you have spoken to acquaintances or friends, and you have seen them. You've seen houses and cars and things in your dreams. In normal, ordinary, every night dreams.
Yes.
Well, then, and I assume also that on this line that on other occasions you have probably dreamed about your husband. You've seen him, spoken to him, so forth. Is that right?
Yes.
Well, then why would it be that in this particular case, when he arrived home from Beacon, you said, what have you been up to? I mean, what was different about this dream?
Because it frightened me.
It frightened you?
It frightened me.
Just, you know, nothing you can explain? It just happened?
No, it just frightened me because he had never appeared that way to me before.
Well, Mrs. Sinatra, was this more realistic than it had ever been before?
It was more realistic.
And that was the difference that caused you to be frightened.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel that you were asleep and dreaming at the time that you saw him, or did this seem to you as if you were awake?
No, I was asleep when this... I was asleep.
You were obviously asleep, Annika. There was no question of you. Something wakened you from your sleep, and you saw him in your bedroom. This was a dream, definitely.
This was a dream, definitely. Yes.
I see. And was that about the only time that that's happened, where he has astrally projected himself to you?
That's about the only time. Other times I have very bad dreams and about him, and things in a short time later they actually happen. Reality.
Well, one thing that fascinates me is apparently you are aware of conversations that your husband has with other people at a distance.
Well, in that particular time.
But I think there were mentions of other occasions when you knew that your husband was speaking with some girl. Wasn't that mentioned before? On another occasion aside from this hunting trip?
No.
Oh, well.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Tell him the story on Pitkin Avenue. When I was homesick with the fever, and you weren't picking them, your cousin told. Now, here's something that it's another process.
I was walking on the avenue, and some friend of mine told me, he says, you know, Gene, I saw your husband. I said, so how could you see my husband? My husband was sick in bed. And I went home. I did some shopping, and I went home. Here, my husband was in bed, and I asked him if he walked out of the house. He says, no, I've been in bed all the while. He says, isn't it funny that some people told me that they saw you out on the avenue? And then I asked my sister-in-law who happened to come in to see him, and she says, well, he's been here all the while, and came to pay him a visit. And yet people on the outside told me that they saw him.
But I was following up what I thought would be a great wifely advantage if you knew somehow whom your husband was talking to, and he couldn't play around with a little blonde upstate or something, because his wife would know right away.
I described this girl to a teak. I hear the complexion.
Well, this was a case where you did know of someone
I didn't know who the girl was.
But you knew he was speaking to some woman. And that you more or less...
During that time, I told this girl, I'm going to send an impulse. It was a full moon to my wife. And just as you are, now this was not astral projection, it was a mental impulse. I says, when I go home, I want to see if she can describe it. We took the date and the hour, I looked at the time, the vibration was right. And she described the girl to a T because I sent her the impulse.
In other words, this is something you consciously do. She doesn't, your wife can't just...
Well, we are mentally contacted through the process of mental telepathy at times. Both of ourselves, that we buy the same thing at the same time, or do the same things at the same time, feel the same thing, and maybe think of the same thing by mental unconscious impulses. But astral projection, I have several experiences with astral projection. Now, there's three kinds. One where you materialize yourself and they see you. Two, which you are visible at times when the cosmic ray passes through and your body becomes visible. Then there's a third type, which happened on this week on this program here, which I'm going to explain when Long John comes in here, where people vibrate the same way you do, and I think the same way you think. I done an astral projection while I was sick, and it happened right in this place here. I'm waiting till Long John come in, and I'm going to tell you. I got the recordings of it. How the other person felt, and he mentioned my name, and he knew it was for no good reason at all, and why he was talking that way. There's various types of astral projections, you see what I mean? Where you radiate yourself. Now, just a minute, I want to explain what
happened. Now, how did you radiate yourself?
The radiation took place. What was 1492 was here?
No, it wasn't 1492.
1452. That was 206, was there? 203?
No, there was no 206. There is
203. 203, that's what in Spanish means.
Yeah, in Spanish it means that, yes. But he dropped the O because O is zero, and no. Zero means nothing. So
at
he dropped
the time I was homesick, at the time he was talking, I was homesick. And these impulses, I start thinking over here. So what happened? Well, I'm concentrating. I probably sent my astral body unconscious here, and it was the same tone with 203. So when
with 203 or 1452?
No, with 203. Now, what happened?
Well, I'm sorry. I know that the listeners are going to object, but I'm so fascinated at this point. Did you project yourself astrally here the night that 1452 and 23 were here?
I was concentrating. I'm trying to project myself.
Did you arrive here?
I don't know whether I arrived. But anyhow, sometimes there's a physical contact with two people in harmonious vibration. What did he say? He was a boat going to from the south coast of Mexico. He was playing the Bunga Bungas. And Sinatra was there playing the Bunga Bungas, Andy Sinatra, and giving haircuts on the boat. Why did he have to mention these things? I got recordings of it. Out of the clear sky. I don't know the man from Adams. So consequently, my best experience must have been that I actually unconscious. When I'm sick, I'm telling you these things happen. You want to hear right on your own. He mentioned that. I got the recordings on. Now, why should he mention Andy Snott was me, a boat going to the South Coast? Now, sometimes protection.
Well, as far as I could hear that night, Mr. 1452 was mentally disturbed.
Not 1452.
Yes, he was a little concerned. In other words, were you employed as a barber on this boat?
No, I never was on a boat, but sometimes, you see. Sometimes predictions and events of time are told you in advance. I'm going to, in order to analyze 1452 to him, he might be predicting things, but in his crude way, in his disturbed mind, he doesn't understand.
You feel that 1452 is crude?
No, I didn't say it's crude.
No, I thought you did say so.
But it don't understand he's synonymous. And sometimes a person gets confused between the psychic impulses and the mental impulses.
You think 1452?
I'll give you an idea. While I was in the veteran hospital working, I had to give a guy a haircut and shave. One of the veterans, the doctor said, Andy's going to finish up. So I took care of the man, and he's all hopped up. And he says to me, and he looks at me, he says, Andy, be careful of two women out of the clear sky. Now, he gave me an event that after 2 years, if I didn't remember what he told me, I would have got myself in an awful swindle because he told me. And recently I predicted an earthquake in California. I didn't say how big. Here's my friends here. According to my calculations, I've been 80% right in my earthquakes. But according to record, my secretary here. Yeah, the little kid came to me about 12 years old. He says, Andy's only going to be a little one there. You know, one of the kids were over there. They were talking. It happened a little, but it happened. So you see, sometimes events are predicted to you unconsciously. Now let us get the analyzed 1452, or it's 1452. The man is talking about, let's say, cotton candy, right? Mm-hmm. Now we know that we had angel's hair falling through the sky. It isn't possible this angel hair they call might have been somebody throwing cotton candy around and give people impulses. Hair from outer space.
You think someone was throwing cotton candy down to the sky?
Now, he mentions cotton candy. Then he mentions plastic soup. Now, you can take any soup and you add enough gelatin to it and dry it. It'll look like a bar of plastic.
Venusian, he had a bag of soup with him. He was rattling this bag when he was being interviewed. I said to him, I guess you're not too familiar with this, Charles. When I was out in Carteret, and I'll try to be as brief as possible because some people resent the rehash, but I think we'll have to at this point. We were out in Carteret, New Jersey. I think Bill Preston was there, and I forget, somebody else was there that particular morning. It wasn't Haley. And a young man called up, and he said he was a musician, and he spoke in the jargon of the musicians, you know, man this, man that, cool and
Silk and Shawn, and he said he was a tenor sax man, and he plays an electronic horn that's in tune with Venus. So I said, we'll drop out. So after the coffee break, he arrived, and the very first comment he made as he came into the studio, man, this is a small place, you know, and he just, he came from blowing a gig, and I didn't understand some of the jargon. We got talking a moment. He's a very interesting young man, and he told us a number of things, and he didn't want to give us his name. So he said, you can use my union number. And I said, what's the number? And he said, 1452. And I said to him, well, how should I address you? And he said, just call me by my first name. And he said, well, unfortunately, I don't know your first name. He says, it's 14.
Well, naturally, John.
I wasn't familiar with it. So then he was kind enough to come back at a later date, and he brought with him another musician, a Cuban, who spoke Spanish, and some people, I do not understand the language, unfortunately, but evidently the number was 203, yet he called the musician 23, and I found out later the reason that he called him 23 is because zero is nothing, and why bother saying nothing when you don't need it, nothing? So you drop the zero out of 203, and you wind up with 23, and this is quite an intelligent approach to the problem,
yeah.
I think.
We could call the station WR from now on.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, very good, John.
So the next thing that comes up, he's very fond of cotton candy. He always has a pocket full of it.
And he's the one that was dropping the cotton candy.
That's right.
Ah.
So he has a theme song, Keep Your Cotton Picking Fingers Out of My Cotton Candy, which he was kind enough to play a chorus of it for us.
Yes, that was.
And in turn...
Kind.
He was rattling a paper bag, and I knew it would be disturbing to our listeners, and I suggested that he put the bag to one side, and he said, man, I want my soup, and I just didn't make sense to me, and I found out in a few minutes later that he had soup in the bag, but it was plastic soup, you know, alphabet soup, with plastic letters and plastic soup, and he told us that on the planet Venus...
Uh-huh.
That everything, all their food is plastic. They got plastic tuna fish. And I said, well, I can't understand why you'd want plastic tuna. Well, he said, when you eat plastic all the time, you get tired of the styrene plastic and the foam plastic. So you have tuna-flavored plastic and things of that nature. So when they were on, it seems that the Cuban, the bongo drum player, was born on a boat. And his parents were musicians. And they were going back and forth between one place and another, and they never got off the boat, so the boy, he was 17 years of age before he got to Cuba.
Well, yeah, that makes sense.
And during this period of time, this, I think it was 23 or 52, told us that he met the Mystic Barber, Andy Sinatra, and that Sinatra was cutting hair on the boat.
I was playing the bong bong stuff.
Yeah, you're playing a bongo drum and cutting hair.
Eating plastic soup, I take it. What flavor was this plastic soup?
I never found out.
You never told me.
No, I think it was minestrone, if I'm not mistaken.
Wasn't he the man that said there was a cat in the satellite?
Yes, wrapped in saran. Yeah, the kitty was wrapped in saran.
You know something?
Yes.
Did you hear about the Russians going to shoot the cows around the Earth?
No.
Well, that's the greatest gag in the world. You know, the next satellite, they're going to have two cows. And it's going to be the herd shot around the world.
I guess. Doc, I was not my line.
I got it.
I was not my situation.
All right. Now, but I would like... Let me just ask you this question. Is it possible, Mystic Barber, I don't know, but is it possible that maybe your astral body was... doing the barbering work on the boat?
I told you, when I'm sick, funny things happen. It ain't the first time. I was with fever during that time. I was home. Like, I'm out of a sick bed for 2 weeks. But anyway, I want to analyze the situation. Now, sometimes things are predicted to you in advance. Now, friends, remember that time I tried to get you on the phone? It was Monday or Tuesday.
Yes.
Well, all of a sudden, you're going to grab the phone and a pan of waterfall. The pitcher of waterfall.
Yes, it did.
Now, what was that? That was telling you, an event was telling you, that you're going to be in flooded. So what happened? 6 or 7 days after, you were spotted over here. That's an unconscious event, a prediction. You were spotted down here. There was spud. The building was flooded.
Oh, you mean when the water main broke out?
Yeah, when you dropped that fridge unconsciously, and that's what happened at the time, I was trying to get you on the phone. When you dropped that picture. And when I do things, events happen. Now, regarding these things here, they mentioned my name. His number's 203, right?
Yes.
Then he comes, he says, Andy Snapper, a plane of one bomb is going from the south coast to Mexico. Now, he's 203, is maybe 203 days from now, I may be taking a trip to Mexico.
Yes.
But I'm trying to see if this calculation is right. Maybe I'm wrong. Now, then we get, for instance, 1452. He's talking about cotton candy. Now, we know we have angel's hair, and the claim was torn from outer space. People picked it up. Now, is it possible it was cotton candy?
You know, that is something. I've never stopped to consider that. It's an interesting thought. Let me take just a moment. We're talking about cotton candy and angel hair. I like to talk about food for a moment.
Well, the other man I had on before, it seemed to confuse my way of thinking. The vibration are not harmonious to surrounding, and this can be due sometimes to lunar attraction because that's a copper metal. And the copper metal carries a different frequency than aluminum does. It sets off different vibrations which are absorbed by the body. And one who's psychic is sensitive to these things. So that's why I tried the other band before. I find it hard for me to think or concentrate. So there's only one method. I put on this other band, I relax, and I find out I could think much clearer and much better. Of course, you heard me at the beginning of the program. I talked a little offbeat, wasn't clear enough. The proof is there. Then I switched bands again with the one that I had this morning on, and I found out the same thing did affect. It was not a question of imagination. It was a question of actual feeling and results of the power of thinking. Then I went back to my third eye band. I find out it's more harmonious.
Well, you had the other band that you had on before. I give and understand this repels messages from various places, Venus perhaps included, or just repels all messages.
The first band I had was to repel mental impulses from people on this earth.
Oh,
but sometimes people have power to transmit their thought waves into other people, being we're very sensitive. It may cause me and upset me in certain conditions.
Mm-hmm.
But I found out that instead of what I've done to this thing, I might have done something different, made it more powerful. It's repulsing my own power of thinking. If I have to make a change, there's certain things that are still only known to me. It was an experiment.
I'm sorry to interrupt a moment, Mystic Barber. You say that these things are known only to you.
Yeah.
I was led to believe that during the time that you have projected the astral body into the fourth dimension, that you received this information. So isn't it true that other people other than yourself are familiar with it, at least people in the fourth dimension?
Those in the fourth dimension are not people.
I see. What are they?
We are only people when we're in material flesh.
What are the intelligences
that...
They're
what they call a different frequency. They're not people. They're what they call souls or spirit, in plain words, what we are going to be when we die. How come I'm frank with them? It's a spiritual world.
I see. That's very interesting. Yes.
Therefore, they have no bodies. Mm-hmm. It's a different vibration, and as these things were revealed to me. Now, tonight I've done a powerful experiment. You see, in back of this thing, I have something over here. I want to see.
Well, would you describe it?
These are secrets that I only give them to us.
Who's to us?
To those who are sent here and given the authority by the fourth dimension to reveal certain things.
Well, before you give us that secret, and I don't want to divulge to anybody, I'd like to talk a moment about one of our sponsors. And now, right in the center of that, I see something that I believe you called a sunstone.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Now, what does this enable you to do?
Well, I'll explain to you. I think I explained at the beginning of the program.
Well, I didn't understand
it. It doesn't make me do nothing. The sunstone merely is there to absorb the vibrations and prevent too many vibrations or impulses entering the brain. And you know, people who are psychic sometimes are oversensitive. Now, I'll have to bring you back to stories when I was a child and it. My grandmother had a friend who always wore a hat and hairpins in her hair. So my grandma used to tell her, why do you wear the hairpins? She says, when I take these hairpins out, I have terrific headaches. Now, what was it? That the metal of the hairpins absorbed certain amount of radiation from her body that she received that she didn't give her the headache. Now, people years ago have worn armlets, headbands, and various things to relieve them of various ailments. But these people who had these ailments were people who were psychic or sensitive to certain things. Now, a psychic don't have to be psychic in the mind. You can have a sensitive shoulder against weather. You can have a sensitive elbow. You can feel sound sometimes. Now, by wearing these particular bands or metals of various kinds will prevent that sensitivity. Now, I was born with Mercury in the according to astrology and Uranus on the mind, which makes me hypersensitive to certain outside impulses and local impulses. Therefore, I know these things from past experience. And out there, that the sensation is in the feeling. So I went back to the old story of what my grandmother, my grandfather did years ago by applying the ancient so-called armbands, and I applied various different bands at the time on my head to see what the result was. Not through imagination, but through actual power of thinking and concentration. I see, I come here with no literature or nothing at all written out. Yet I can answer questions as they hand it to me. I don't have to go back to memories. But if it wasn't for these bands that I had, I'd probably be confused. I wouldn't be able to think straight. In other words, this prevents too much power or acts like a condenser from going through the brain or eliminating the brain and interfering with certain vibrations which vibrate on the bones of your body and leave impulses on your brain.
I see. Well,
now, people sometimes are hypersensitive to this. As I work in a mental institute and I learn where they may have atrophy of the bone, the bones become hard, they hear through their bones. Vibration from all space strike their bones in that frequency and they hear voices and they hear different things. Although I never heard voices and different things, I'm applying a preventative which I know sometimes can be created and an ailment can be developed.
I see. Well, this third eye, then, doesn't enable you to see more. What it does is to help screen out the vibrations.
No. The only time we see was our own eye. But people can see through their skin and through what they call the pituitary gland. That was first an eye, according to science, when we had a hole in the head, like a hole in the moon. But as generation came by, we lost that. We really had two eyes first. We got pituitary and pineal gland. The pineal gland was the eye in back of the head, so we could see behind when we were back in more in the animal stages. And the pituitary gland was the eye looking front.
Then we had four eyes?
No, we had two eyes. But as man developed in different forms, his eyes began to develop in front. Now we know, if we take a case where the light is not used in the caves and that, there's fish without eyes. Yet those fish live and go about their business. In caves, these things have been found. Now, if we were to live in darkness, we wouldn't need the eyes. We'd follow by sensation. Certain blind people are known to perceive things and by the vibration of their skin. They become sensitive. That's a type of a sight. So we're developing of nature. This band is to prevent high vibration. That third eye is merely that it holds certain vibrations just like the brain holds thoughts. And only releases them to you when you want them.
Oh,
and that is a trap there. There's a magnetic trap there. This is a magnet right there, see?
Yeah.
If you take a... I'll show it to you. Watch this thing move when I go near it. See, watch. See? And what's the needle? The needle.
Where's the needle?
Under here. See, that's it.
Oh, that's the
now
needle.
Now watch. Watch it when I push it. Watch. See it?
Yeah.
Now, the needle moves.
Yeah.
That's because it has a magnetic trap. Not that I'm revealing any secrets.
Now,
it's a common thing. Everything is based on a magnetic field.
What is this device that you have just shown me here, this thing in the plastic case?
That is to receive the impulses. This I use with the in connection with the pendulum.
That's to be used with the pendulum?
Put the pendulum on there, see, and the pendulum will give me an answer, yes or no, according to the pendulum.
Now, do you have a pendulum with you today?
There's a pendulum right there.
Oh,
I'm not here prepared to do this thing now because we're on the program.
Or is it that the vibrations are not right?
No, the vibrations, this is always right with me. Remember the article I told you about that you read about me on a loose sporting condition? I've done that with the pendulum.
With the pendulum?
Yeah, and I got to write up about it. And was a certain thing. You read, that compliments you what you read. That was done and predicted with the pendulum. I have predicted a lot of things with the pendulum.
Now, how do you predict something with a pendulum? Doesn't all the pendulum do is swing back and forth?
Well, someday when we get together, we'll get some plates. Put sugar in one plate, salt in another plate.
Yeah.
And another plate with paper that's blank. And I'll tell you which is a tree, salt, and sugar, which is blank.
And what is this other device you have here? This,
This is, that's what they call a high-frequency mic.
A high-frequency
mic. When I talk through here, it changes the frequency, very high frequency, so that the vibrations, not only the words, but the vibrations reach the fourth dimension. The vibrations. See, this will, if you will, what the tuneless mic on here, nothing would come through. You won't
hear it. That lets you talk into the fourth dimension?
Yeah. It was made accordingly, struck me according to the fourth dimension, the way I got things in here. Very simple.
And how do you hear back from them?
I hear back through when they come through here, the vibrations come through here, and then it's transmitted into this thing here, and I get sensations through here. I know I'm getting a message. Then I get a vision.
Oh, that's the device that works
also,
with the pendulum.
Yeah.
It also works with your headband.
Yeah. Now, if you put a glass of water on here, it's certain sounds you can't hear. Now, this works through vibration, not radio.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? Now, there's certain sounds. You take a tuning fork, and you know if you bang it, you'll hear sounds. Some tuning forks you don't hear, right?
Yes.
Now, if you take a glass of water and bang a tuning fork, you drink that water, you hear the tuning fork. Right? Because the water picks up the vibration and it's carried through your teeth through bone conduction, you hear it in your ears.
Well, if I can't hear the tuning fork in the air, I can't hear it in the water.
Oh, yes, you can. Anytime you wish to try, write the Psychic Society in England, and they'll explain these things. In fact, this was on television demonstrated by the English Psychic Society.
Does anybody here demonstrate it?
Well, here I haven't seen nobody.
Uh-huh.
If I get the tuning fork sometimes, I'll let you and I'll show you. The water picks up frequencies that your ear can't pick up or you can't hear. When you drink that water through a straw and it contacts the bone section of your mouth, that becomes bone conduction where your own ear don't hear, the bone will hear it.
Well, if you put a glass of water on this receiving device you have...
If the vibrations come in that you and I don't hear, you'll hear it through regular radio tubing.
Now, if you put the glass of water on there, later on you drink the water, get the message
you don't
then?
You drink the water. You put a rod in there.
Yeah.
A carbon rod with a mic, or the other mic, like we got here.
Yes.
And then these vibrations that you can't hear, not radio waves, but vibrations.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear them after bypassing through an amplifier. We've done that today on my house, my secretary.
Now, what sort of messages do you get?
You get different sounds, different vibrations. Some of them are fast, some are slow. They have to record it through a recorder. If they're fast, you pass them through a recorder and then slow them down.
Well, what sort of message is it?
Well, what it is, it's message.
Yeah, what's the content of it? What sort of a message is it? What words is it? What is the
Must
actual
I tell
meaning
you what words it is?
Well, I'd like to know
whatever they are, that's the secret between me and the space people. You understand?
Yeah.
And it's not to be revealed to no one. This is about being done as an experiment.
Now, there was a listener last night that called in and that wanted us to ask you a question.
Please excuse me. These things I've demonstrated. You come over the house, I'll make you hear the vibrations. It's not somebody else transmitting anything. But they're just vibrations.
You would be willing to share your secret with me, then?
Well, it's no secret. If I had a secret, would I tell it on television? I would talk to it on radio?
Well, you just told me that.
I'll show you. In fact, if some people want to make these things and want to try them, The more people know about these, the more people be told with the fourth dimension, there'll be a more peaceful world.
Well, you told me that the messages that you get from the fourth dimension are secret between you and them.
Yeah, for a period of time. I understand the vibrations, what they mean.
If I went over to your house and I heard these...
You'll hear vibrations at different times, high pitches, low pitches.
Wouldn't I be able to understand?
No, you wouldn't understand.
Why?
Because you had to go to a certain train. You've never been on a fourth dimension, have you?
No, I don't think so.
Do you understand space language?
I don't think so.
So we talk space language.
Well, here's one of the things that I wanted to ask you, yeah. Mystic Barber. One of the listeners called in last night and wanted this question put to you. I believe you've been in touch with the people that are in the flying saucers, haven't you?
Yes.
You? Don't you understand the Venusian?
I understand the fourth. There's no such a thing as a Venusian language.
No?
Well, the language I have is from the fourth dimension.
You haven't spoken that as yet, have you?
Huh?
Did you speak that this morning? Did you give us the message?
Wait, I don't remember what you're saying.
No, it's all right. Perfectly all right. I just got a telepathic communication. The answer was no. I was just wondering if you would be kind enough, Mystic Barber, would you just sit over there with a member of your staff and sort of relax for a couple of minutes?
Yeah.
And we'll have you back here again in possibly another 10 minutes. Thank you very much. This is WOR Radio, your station in New York, and this is Long John with the Party Line. I mentioned to our listeners that we possibly may have Paulina Peavy, a lady who goes into a trance, and during the time that she's in the trance, she receives inspirations to paint. Now, I possibly have not phrased this right, but this is about all I know at the moment. I can say this to you, though, that Pauline Peavy is an artist, inventor, designer, sculptor, poet, writer, and lecturer, and she was born in Colorado City. She lived most of her adult life on the West Coast. And she has received degrees in art and education from leading colleges and schools, as well as honors and awards in art and architecture. Possibly some of you people have seen her work at the various art galleries. Now, Miss Peavy is sitting to my right. To her left, opposite me, is Dave Bell. To my left, opposite Miss Peavy, is Charles Leadham. Miss Peavy has a very, very unusual mask on. To describe the mask, I would say that it looks like a base color of chartreuse with gray stripes, sort of charcoal gray stripes running through it diagonally. There are many fancy trimmings around it. It's a very large mask that covers at least three-quarters of her face. There are pearls on both sides of the mask and a number of pieces of metal. I would say it's a very, very attractive and a very beautiful work of art as far as masks are concerned. And she tells us that it's important that she wears this mask during the time that she's in the trance state. Now, Miss Peavy has not gone into the trance as yet. I wonder if you'll assist her, Dave, so that she can get up a little closer to lean on the table in front of the microphone. We'd like to talk to her for a moment first. Miss Peavy, when did you first realize that you could go into a trance?
At least 25 years ago, I heard voices, very strange voices coming through me.
Coming through you?
Yes. Startled me a very great deal, although I had been investigating the mystery of my paintings, which started coming 25 years ago.
Well,
I, uh, oh, 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 When such power moves in, the strange sounds are caused by the power taking over. You see Paulina squirming about because we are putting into her being high voltage. And in order to receive us and maintain herself, she has had to build up her electrodes to meet our high voltage. Well, that's the way they come in. And then they release me, and then apparently I talk.
May I interrupt just a moment? Miss Peavy evidently just came out of a trance state. I can assure you, being very honest with the listeners, I had absolutely no knowledge that she would be in the trance state that soon. And in fact, I was just starting to interview her, and all of a sudden, she sort of went back in her chair, and we heard this different voice. How do you feel when you're in a trance, Pauline?
Well, I feel very exhilarated. And now, as you will see, this is not the voice of Paulina, for we have not released her entirely. Although we have prepared her that when we come through, we are using her exactly as you use your microphone. We are beings existing in a world of too high frequency for your comprehension. And we need to lower our frequency by this manner that our thought will be audible to you. We use Paulina, who uses us. Together, we have painted many thousands of paintings in her, several hundred, probably near 1,000, for the purpose of introducing ourselves to you in the way that we desire to be introduced. For you have many ideas regarding us that are your ideas, and they are not our reality. And as we come to you in many ways, and you call us flying saucers, space men, Venusians, and other of your names, we need to introduce ourselves in our language, and our language is not a babble tongue, for we communicate with each other in our world by sending or radiographing, as you would say, pictures. I think the pause is for questions.
You just went into another trance, is that right, Pauline?
Yeah, that's right.
Did we hear two of your mentors?
The beings that I entertain are universal beings who do not render individual personalities as you do in your world. We are universal beings. We do not place upon ourselves labels, as do you, to call ourselves John Doe forever, for we now hold your hats, for we have found perpetuity of life. And it would be very droll if we called ourselves Paulina Peavy for the rest from now on. Therefore, we come, and many times when you hear a one voice, you hear a multitude of us. For we are in a world whereby we have thought simultaneously with uncountable legions of us. We do not give Paulina personal names for us. She has a name which is her name when she speaks to us. We do not use your names in our world.
I guess that's a pause for questions.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, I would like to ask a question. Are the people in this world like we are?
We are your elders. We, ages ago, were like you, as you. We have progressed by many aeons of time beyond your station, and now we exist as a perfected, you would say, seed. When you see us, and we are able to reduce our high-frequency waves to come into your sight in your skies, and you see us as flying saucers, we are showing you our planetary form. For we are a single cell with one eye, the original eye. Out of that single cell, we mutate into creature form as you take your birth.
Then the explanation of the flying saucers is an attempt of these people to enter into our world?
We have never departed you and your world. And the world is not as you think you see it with your two outer eyes. You might say the world is an atomic nature of matter. We do not see skies like you see skies. We see into the eye of the atom, even the eye of the atom that you smash. And you know that when you smash an atom, you see volumes of infinity emerging from that microscopic eye. We indwell ourselves, our eye. We are interspatial beings coming out, emerging, or slowing up our molecular rate that you might perceive us.
I think in all fairness, Dave, would you take Paulina back over the side there? She looks like she's physically exhausted at this moment. You might give her a glass of water there, I think, for the moment. We should permit her to rest. Don't you agree, Charles?
Yes, Charles, it looks like it.
This is WOR Radio, your station in New York. This is Long John with the Party Line. We're around from midnight to 5:30, 6 mornings during the week. Designer, sculptor, Miss Peavy went into 2 or 3 trances. We heard her mentors talking, telling us about some of the things that have happened in other dimensions. Miss Peavy appears to be physically exhausted from the strain of going into the trances. I've had a small amount of experience in this before. We had Mark Probert, the trance medium, on the program one morning, and I know that we had to go off the air for a period of about 10 or 12 minutes to permit Mr. Probert to recuperate. And we may, I can't say, we will have to talk to her after a little while. We may have her back on the air this morning. We're talking this morning with Charles Leadham, TV producer and author, Dave Bell, and Andy Sinatra, the Mystic Barber. We have also talked this morning to two gentlemen from a hypnotic group. They claim that they're able to project their bodies astrally. And we certainly have a number of things that we possibly will learn from the Mystic Barber.
Well, Mystic Barber, you don't have your headband on anymore?
No, I'll tell you why. You see, there's certain... I got a book explaining certain cycles, certain hours at a time.
Is there a book that's published on the band, Doctor?
That's published and put up, and it's a rare edition, only explaining when the forces of things are against you.
Is this book available to the general public?
No. But I can give you a copy of the hours and the days whenever...
I'd love to have the opportunity of seeing the book.
I'll give you a time and the hours, John, when this band should be used. It's known the ancient mystical hours of the time. The certain hours of time of the day when you have certain forces around you that are acting around you. And you require a force of energy, physical body, or to protect yourself. Now, the 3 o'clock was the time today... And 3 o'clock is now over. Therefore, the forces are no longer around you. You're on your own. In other words, you have no interference now whatsoever. According to the science of metaphysics and occult. That's why I don't need the band now no more.
Well, that...
I sense the reaction. I sense it clearing up. And these forces, you've got to understand them just like a person has an ache. It gets stronger, stronger, then the weather changes and it's improving. He sees that ache is going away and he's clear. He knows it's clear weather. Well, this is a similar thing, only it's a mental statement, which you respond later by experience, that these depressions or pressures coming stronger. And you protect yourself till this pressure clears up. And that happens every day to a psychic, only certain hours of the day. And then after that is over, he's okay.
Now, I would like to get back to your projection of the astral body. Didn't you project yourself astrally to the planet Venus?
No. I never said I did. I never said I will. I never was no further than the moon. I claim the day is going to come when I have more experience. I will try to project myself outside of the 8th atmosphere. Now, when you reach the moon cycle, it's still our Earth. It belongs to the cycle of the Earth. It's very dangerous because when you project yourself, you've got to follow a certain beam. And there's magnetic disturbance on each side of the beam, just like when you if you go in front of a television, take an ordinary magnet, you'll notice the picture will move. If you move the magnet in front of your television, where a bunch of electrons are, some magnetic disturbance, one planet or other satellites can throw you off that particular beam. You go entirely to a different direction. You have no control. Because you can't control it with the mind. Or either you got to snap back. And that snapping back will cause a shock that you can die or be maimed in the rest of your life. Some people, through the astral projection, have snapped back so fast that their spine is snapped and broke. Others become maimed, blind, or become insane because of the sudden snapping back of the astral body.
Well, it seems to me that this would be a very dangerous thing to do.
It is dangerous if those who don't... Everything is dangerous. You can walk across the street and you ain't careful to get hit with a car. That's dangerous, too.
Well, that's very true.
Even walking is dangerous if you don't watch yourself. The idea is that before you can claim astral projection, it takes years of experience and years of research. It takes a man at least 25 years before he can claim he's a perfect astral projection. It takes another 25 years before he can... become an astral projection and materialize myself like various people of the biblical facts have done.
Well, did I hear correctly that you can convert your body into ions?
When we're in astral projection, we are the same thing as electronic waves. What are electronic waves?
I don't know.
Television is ions. We are the same simile of a different frequency. That's why frequency we have... WOR, KDKA, yet these frequencies are in together and they don't interfere with each other because of a different vibration.
Mm-hmm.
They pass through different filters. When we take them, they pass through the condenser and they are filtered out like we would filter different foods from with a filter. They're filtered by electricity. And these ionized are left behind. Ions, what we call electrons or ions or electrons, we can give any name we want. That's different names other scientists give them. These ions are filtered out and we get the juice and the juice of the music and whatever these things carry, these little...
Charlie Lado.
Yeah.
Well, as I understand it, Mystic Barber, you have floated around in this electronic waveform shape. Is that true?
I haven't floated around and I'll try to not let the public know the truth. You was almost misrepresenting. I'm in bed, home, minding my own business. It's the astral body which is floating around.
Well, let's, I think we've
and
got...
And the people got to misunderstand like they did last time. I said there was a hole in the moon. And I was trying to mention that there was tunnels that were bigger than all of them.
This is obviously a mistake if anyone thought there was a hole in the moon.
People think in here they get a misunderstanding of it.
Well,
they were a bunch of crackpots here, sir. People with intelligent minds and were trying to help the people and trying to enlighten them to facts that are around. By talking this way, one way or the other, you're an intelligent man. I don't claim I'm so intelligent, but at least we're talking sense. But if you go around by mistake, making a statement which really is an honest mistake, it gives them a wrong impression.
You can understand how people might jump to the wrong
conclusion. Before you make a statement, all right, you don't know, say, I don't know, explain yourself. When I don't know something, I explain it my way, best way I can. If I don't, I ask somebody. I'm basing on my own physical laws that I know. And there's only one universal law, no matter who you are or what you are, there's only one law of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Penis is penis, and it's penis no matter whether it's in butter, whether you make it in a crack, it's still penis. And a rose is a rose in any other color, still a rose. They can call anything they want.
Yeah, I recognize that quotation. The point that I'm trying to get to is when I say you have been floating around, please assume me to mean your astral body. It's just an easier and shorter way of saying that. You made it clear earlier in the program that it was your astral body. Now, let me restate my question, and I'll put it in parentheses this time. You, by which I mean your astral body, have been floating around and going from place to place in the form of electronic waves. Is that correct?
Well, we would say electronic waves. It forms in a sort of invisible ball. Sometimes it's visible.
Well, now, the thing I'm aiming at is that I hope you can clarify a point about which there is considerable doubt in the physical world, which is the nature of propagation of light and other waves as to whether it is actually a wavefront propagation or whether it's a particle propagation. No one has ever been quite sure, but I suspect a man who has been intimately familiar with it might be able to tell.
Well, if it can't be a particle, because we're material. What goes out there is not material. So it must be a composition of waves.
Uh-huh.
Electronic field spinning in a circle like a galaxy or something of a smaller type.
In other words, your feeling is that the thing is entirely a wave phenomenon. There's no particle
propagation. It's like a galaxy spinning around. It's the same thing. Today, if you're going down sometimes in the street, all of a sudden you see a small whirlwind spinning around.
Well, I haven't done that, no.
No, and it happens to everybody, even when we're kids in a farm or something. All of a sudden, you see maybe a foot and a half, a 2 foot whirlwind spinning around and stopping.
Well, I'll take you. Well, I've never seen it, but I'll take
you. But then we have big whirlwinds which cause destruction and things like that.
Yes.
Well, let's say that little whirlwind is whirlwind, but our astral projection or something may be a little simple thing that's spinning around, just like a little whirlwind. And with that, it carries vibrations and everything what it picks up. Just like an ionosphere. See, we have an ionosphere around the Earth. Right? You know, it's a scientific fact known by science, measured. We call ionosphere.
Yes.
And the repulsive action are against the Earth, and on the other side, they're against the moon. So anything goes past the ionosphere can't come down.
That's right. Well, you feel then that the two... in fact, let me get a basic statement on the two...
That would be the astral body of the Earth, let's say.
Okay, well,
see?
As I understand it, the two objects which the Russians have put up into orbits are beyond the ionosphere. So they are never going to be able to come down again.
The only way they can come down is if they explode.
Even if they explode, then they can come down.
But exploding that thing there and opening up the ionosphere will cause the negative forces from the outside to contact with the positive forces here, and there'll be a sudden flash. And we won't have to worry about China anymore.
Well, would you say that was the phenomenon that occurred when the great meteorite crashed into Siberia in 1870 and something?
Well, I don't know. If there was a meteorite that crashed into Siberia, as I told you, most of these,
Meteorites?
Meteorites. Either they're thrown off from the moon. Because in order way to reach us over here, they have to shoot a rocket from the moon, just like we shoot them here towards the moon. Drawn off from the moon, pieces that were drawn and fall through because of speed, or they've been thrown up in the air by our volcanoes, up past the ionosphere, and then to a certain height they were repulsed back to us by the moon and fell down back to us.
Well, now, in
these
this...
what they call small meteorites. They're really part of our own Earth.
Mm-hmm.
They hit us. They go so high to the atmosphere that they hit near the gravitational moon.
Uh-huh.
The moon is repulsed to the vibration of the Earth. They carry the same frequency of the Earth, and they're thrown back at a great speed of past the ionosphere back to our Earth. That may take months and years of time before that's happened, or they hit the proper frequency.
Well, now, some time ago, you mentioned when your astral body visited the moon, you observed, I think you may have called them moon people, or at least people there, drilling holes to let out the hot air, I think you said.
No, I said they were filling tunnels or holes in the moon, and they were using the hot side of the moon to build so-called, since now they got moisture up there and water, using this water stuff for steam so that they could warm up the cool side of the moon.
I see. Well, in other words, there were people doing this.
There were. There are people there now.
There are people.
I don't know whether they're Russian, Chinese, or our ancestors from years ago that was migrated there when this Earth was.
Oh, these are humans, not
human
not,
like we are.
Not native Lunarians or whatever.
Well, there's
no
such a thing as a native Lunarian.
No, well, this is the point I wanted to make.
They're on an island. They have to come there from unless there was an earthquake that left them there.
Well, the thing I was worried about.
Now, whether they came from outer space or through a source or not, I never inquired. I never found out. There's people out there now. They're trying to work a method to help us by confirming the positive and negative side of the moon. So, just like we have a solar battery, the moon is the biggest solar battery we've got. You think you got North and South Pole here, don't you? Science says we got a North and South Pole. The only pole they got is a right and wrong side of the moon. It's the only one that has electrical field alternating, has what they call a positive field. One side of the moon is negative, one side is positive.
Uh-huh.
Still all here to tell you we got North and South Pole. The world has no North and South Pole. It's all the magnetic field of the moon.
I see. Well, the thing that was concerning me is that seeing as the Russians, if not ourselves, are obviously making progress towards space travel, and eventually we will, or somebody will, land people from the Earth on the moon.
Are you sure the Russians are progressing for making the space people? Well, there's some people from the moon that's been here and helping the Russian people bring that thing.
Well, they may be, you know, getting sort of
what they call space people.
The Russians may be getting assistance, but however they're coming about this.
No Russian, or even our scientists got brains enough to send anything outside of the moon and leave it there. If they are, they're space people, or people what they call from the fourth dimension, and by themselves and our people and us, and in doing so, they will try to speed this condition that's coming, and the sooner it's over, the better it is.
Well, you feel then that humans will never get to the moon?
I mean, humans.
Earth people will never get to the
moon. Whether they're Earth people, they must have been from somewhere, the people that are up there.
Well, in other words, but aside from those who are already there, however they got there, you feel that there, no one who is now on Earth is ever going to get to the moon.
I don't know. I won't tell you something I don't know.
But the thing that was concerning
me... Unless you ask me what I think, that's a different story. Knowing and thinking, I can have my opinion, my viewpoints, and still I don't know.
Yeah, that's possible.
Still you don't have to know.
The thing that I was concerned with is if there were people on the moon who were not humans, and we got there, I was concerned over the certain amount of cultural conflict that might take place. But you apparently don't feel this would... this would be any trouble, seeing as they are probably, as you say, Chinese or somebody originally from the Earth. We'll get along together, in other words.
So simple. I talked this so-called space language, and I told them in the past meeting I was there. When I come back to ask for protection, I start talking a strange language.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just as conscious as you or I. And once in a while, I start babbling this thing off, and I'm surprised that sometimes...
Continue, please.
Sometimes I'm in a barber shop. And I have a kid there, and the mother, he cries, and he don't want to get a haircut. I relax a little bit, and I start talking space language to him. The kid listens to me.
I wonder if you'd be kind enough to do it.
And he answers me. And he keeps quiet, and I give him the haircut. Now, what do they understand about this language?
Would you mind talking a little space talk this morning? A brief message for our listeners?
Well,
Well, yours will understand what it is.
I understand.
I scanned the record, John. Did you find that record?
I
made a record.
I am not allowed to play any records that are not recorded by a commercial...
No, I sent this personally to you show you that I was a spacebacker, not on the radio. I didn't want you to play it on radio.
I am not permitted to play any records because I don't have a turntable at home. And the only records I'm permitted to play here are records that have been made by commercial outfits.
Well, how about these records, this machine? You're putting the money in. They're union made, ain't they?
We're not talking about union at the moment. I'm not permitted to play those records.
Not even your own home?
I don't have a home with a turntable in it. I have a home, but I don't have a turntable.
Well, then you got somebody else's home that you can play the record.
It is not my good fortune to be able to associate with my neighbors. They sort of frown at me because they've listened to the show.
Can a friend of yours mail it to him? Can he play it and let you hear on the phone? You're not violating the law.
This is possible. I certainly would appreciate it very much if, Charles, if you'd arrange that for me sometime.
We'll try to
let you hear on the phone, which makes it legal.
I don't know. Did you send me one recently?
The last time before I came before,
oh,
I mailed
one,
you a record.
No, that one is in Continuity Acceptance Department, and evidently the head of Continuity Acceptance was so enthused that he took it home and put it into his own collection, and he feels it's a priceless record, and he hasn't been kind enough to return it to me. In the meantime, would you be kind enough to do a little space talk for us?
Chimo gatia mayuta. Alamoy gatenshi maduga zaraboy pinginotin potinga. Kama hote lahoya, remei kolomita samoya tingatoyo. I am o kala shimarikuda. All right?
How?
Yeah, it sounds a little like Ute to me, John. I'm not too familiar with the various dialects of the North American Amerinds, but it was sort of like Ute. I see a nod over there. Yes, he agrees it was a little Navajo in there, too, but I'm not sure.
Well, I'll tell you, I wrote
this. You know, this might be the solution to the 10 lost tribes of Israel. They may have gone to the moon, and then I understand there are theories that the 10 lost tribe turned up as the 10 great nations of the Amerinds. So there may be a very definite connection here, because this language is very close to, Sioux, Navajo, Arapaho, and all these things.
Well, I would be interested, unfortunately, we didn't tape that this morning, but if we had taped it, I would have liked to have played it back at a slower speed, and I think possibly we'd be in a position to translate it.
You could play it back to a fast Indian, it might work.
Yes, that's quite true. We also had Mark Probert on the program one morning, and he spoke in the language of Yuh, that's spelt Y-U. That's a language that was spoken some 500,000 years ago by Yoshita.
Oh, I'm not familiar with him. I had a very brief course in history in school, John.
This language causes people to laugh.
Without
this language, and the moon must have been a second comedian. So there's a vibration, even though they don't understand the voice, it makes them laugh unconsciously. So you see how these vibrations work.
Yes.
Now, if I joke, what I said in space language, although they didn't understand the language, they sent the vibration through their cranial, and they're laughing at it now. So it was a good joke that came out of me.
Yes.
No two ways about it. It gradually, I received it telepathically. I think you did just about the same
time. I didn't get the punchline just now.
Well, could you translate that message for us?
No.
Is it of a personal
only
nature?
Only when I go into the fourth dimension, I can translate. I'll tell you a strange case. I was by Miss Peavy. She's right here now. We were experimenting up her house with her guide. And I told Miss Beebe...
Did you say guy or guide?
Guide.
Oh, the guide, yes.
And so I called upon her for space language. Like I do. He opened up repeating different words which corresponded, because we're taught a certain code. If a person's out of space or where he is, he must give me a certain answer. A lodge.
Just want to interrupt for just a brief moment, Mystic Barber. I was wondering, do you think it'd be possible that maybe if Miss Peavy went into another trance, that maybe she could have this mentor appear through her, and possibly you could converse with the mentor?
Will you wait till I get to him? I'll come to that. So he said to us that if there's nine people there, there was only a couple of them, nine people there. Now, my wife was there. She was a friend, little friend. If she has nine people up there, proper vibration, he would make himself visible. But we didn't have nine people. They were in harmonious vibration.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to him, and we tried to contact to Miss Peavy, people on another planet. Now, again, I spoke the space language, and this part didn't answer me.
Mm-hmm.
That means he wasn't not from space. Whatever it was a fruit. Not Miss Peavy, but the party who tried to talk to her. Those who are really spiritually and embody our spiritual, our messages, we have a code word.
Yeah.
If they can answer me in code, according to what the words are, which were told to me to say, let's say you are a medium, I say, I want to call on the Prince of Wales or something, he's dead.
All right.
If he is true, when I say certain words to him in this code word, he's got to give me a certain answer. Now, if he isn't, he's not the spirit of Paul Jones or anybody else. That's why I was taught this code.
So you could recognize
so
them.
So if a spirit medium comes in and says, well, I'm talking about George Washington. That is what they call a medium code. And George Washington, to this particular party, can't give me Yamahuta Khadija. So I said, the answer is that. That means he's not George Washington. He's a false spirit, and we're getting false representation. In other words, to me, you have to get the right spirit of the right thing, what they call a master medium. I mean, can create memes, I can make them through my process of study.
You mean that there is impersonation in
there
the spirit world?
There are impersonation in the fourth dimension, what they call the fourth dimension, unwrapped, that the body of person make believe that that particular person that they are. In other words, these are what they call condensed spirits or lost souls.
You mean someone like Benedict Arnold might pretend he was George Washington?
Come in, sir. That's why a lot of these mediums themselves, they're not responsive. Like, a wrong spirit will come through them.
Yeah.
When I'm with them, that's why when I'm with Peavy here, these wrong things can't come true. Like, I had a couple come down to see me the day after while I'm sleeping. I went to the fourth dimension, pleaded with me to leave them alone.
Yeah.
They're not the bottom. They promised to behave themselves. Now, there's lots of things you can't go around telling people. Like, well, I bring them over here and say, look, they told me this and that. I've gone through these experiences. I've been a child. To me, it's natural to go through these things. I don't have to study. I don't have to read.
Yes.
I've had people with the so-called demented. I've experimented in a mental institution where they were disturbing these people got well because they were spiritually disturbed.
They were
not crazy. If people are really crazy, they're crazy. Because what you, those who are spiritually disturbed, when one of us goes near them, they either get away from you, try to run away from you for no good reason, or they get weak. They go into a faint and these so-called disturbances get out of them.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you cast out as a great man did once cast out of the person. When you were a master, you're a natural psychic. You can and develop other talents and people. I can share three cases where we had a woman over here. She was under hypnotized. And then after that, she began to visualize what a person had in a box out in Greenland.
Mm-hmm.
And she started through hypnotism. In other words, she had the talent in there, but it was a hypnotist that developed it. Then you get another case, Edgar Casey.
Yes.
It was only after he was hypnotized that he developed his talents.
Uh-huh.
And then we have a great religious leader of a big organization today. It was only after through hypnotism that she became awakened to the true feeling that she could heal people. But it was hypnotism that started, but he could have hypnotized 1,000 times. If the talent was not born in them by an act of divinity, they were meant to be that, it wouldn't have done nothing.
Well, do you feel, Ben Singh, as a large number of people who are now confined in institutions are apparently not insane in the proper sense of the word, but they are spiritually upset or deluded, do you feel that the psychiatrists and other authorities who are in charge of our institutions are following a wrong course in taking care of them?
Well, I'll tell you. Psychiatrists are right to a certain extent. The 60% of these people in a mental institution have nothing wrong with them, but they're mentally impressed. In other words, there's such a thing as you can be fear will cause hypnotizing to a person.
Yeah.
An animal can look at a person with a gun, and that person will get so scared he can't shoot him.
Mm-hmm.
That animal has created fear.